So much for that bailout.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke, and we wake up this morning to the fifth biggest bankruptcy in U.S. history. It's CIT Group, a century-old company that may not be as well-known as Washington Mutual or General Motors, but it matters a whole lot to the small and mid-sized companies that use CIT as a primary source of cash to fund their operations. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
CIT is the primary lender to hundreds of thousands of manufacturers and retailers, from Eddie Bauer to Dunkin' Donuts, so its Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing means a lot as the economy is coming out of recession and heading into the holiday shopping season. Many of these businesses are already struggling to find banks that'll lend to them or extend lines of credit. Bob Coleman publishes the Coleman Report on small business lending. He says CIT's problems with subprime mortgages have already caused the bank to cut way back.
They are down over 80% in 2009 versus 2008, and that translates all across the tens of thousands of small businesses that they service.
CIT's goal, with the blessing of investor and bondholder Carl Icahn, is to emerge from bankruptcy by the end of December and to keep its business lending going during that time. The biggest losers are stockholders and the U.S. Treasury, which pumped $2.3 billion in bank bailout funds into CIT. That investment is probably lost. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And over the weekend, there were 9 more bank failures. That makes 115 so far this year. These banks were in California, Illinois, Texas, and Arizona. They were all part of the same holding company. Now they've all been taken over by U.S. Bank. European markets are mixed this morning. Asian stocks were mostly lower today. And on Wall Street, after that last downer week, the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ ended up losing ground for October. The Dow, though, stayed flat for the month. It's at 9,712. Europe's biggest no-frills airline, Ryanair, says its quarterly profit jumped 35%, mostly thanks to lower fuel prices. But this quarter could be less rosy. Ryanair says it's cutting ticket prices by as much as 20% this winter, and it will cut ties with Boeing unless the carrier gets a better deal on new planes. Stephen Beard has more from London.
Ryanair is one of Boeing's best customers. The carrier's entire fleet was supplied by the U.S. plane maker, and it's currently negotiating to buy a further 200 aircraft. But Ryanair today issued an ultimatum. If Boeing doesn't cut its prices, the airline will buy no more planes from Boeing, and it will stop expanding its own business and hand cash back to its shareholders instead. Mark Pilling is editor of Airline Business magazine. He says Ryanair's threat is typically aggressive, but not entirely credible.
I can't see an airline that's based its whole strategy over the last 15, plus years on growing at a, pretty healthy double-digit lick to then reverse that. That sounds quite incredible to me.
He says that Boeing has a lengthy order book with other carriers around the world and is resisting Ryanair's demands, but the plane maker will not want to lose such a good customer, least of all to its old rival Airbus. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by The Economist, covering news and ideas from around the world and the connections between them. The Economist, on newsstands, in bookstores, and at economist.com. And by Nova, Becoming Human on PBS, the evolution of evolution. Nova, Becoming Human, Tuesday at 8, 7 Central on PBS.
President Obama and Chinese President Hu Jintao will meet in Beijing this month for talks on trade and the environment. The countries have been clashing on protectionism, and currencies, and climate change, but author Zachary Karabell says the U.S. and China are more team than rivalry. His new book is called Super Fusion: How China and America Became One Economy and Why the World's Prosperity Depends on It. Zachary, good morning.
Good morning.
I was surprised to read in your book how much we not only buy from China, but the massive amount we sell to China, from equipment to know-how to fried chicken and lipstick. But calling the U.S. and China one economy, how do you figure?
Well, it's obviously meant to be a provocative title, and it's more to say that these economic systems have become so intimately intertwined over the past 10 to 20 years that they are becoming their own system that in many ways transcends the national boundaries of each country.
The U.S. and China are involved in high-level trade talks right now. What do you expect to come out of those?
You know, I expect the rhetoric to continue to be very favorable. Chinese diplomacy is a behind-closed-doors, say pretty anodyne, generic things in public, and then get into the nitty-gritty away from the public eye. You know, in private, it's a little more difficult to tell because there's still a degree to which both countries and the leadership of both countries see themselves as able to browbeat the other or get the other to do what they want. And that is unrealistic. Neither the United States nor China are amenable to that kind of pressure from the other.
Is China's growth eventually going to somehow swamp the U.S. economy? Are we at a disadvantage because of it?
That's unclear. I think a lot of that depends on the degree to which the United States is able to remain vibrant, innovative, and creative, is able to, in fact, create a new generation economy to replace the economy that we've been leaving. And if we're not able to, then China, which is very much in an upward swing and does have a lot of self-confidence in their ability to carve out their own future, may, in fact, over the coming decades, surpass or overtake the United States as the locus of global economic activity. And to some degree, there's an inevitability to that. As they prosper more, the relative position of the United States will shift. And that's not necessarily a bad thing for the United States, certainly not a bad thing for the world, and nor should we view it that way.
Zachary Karabell is the author of Superfusion, How China and America Became One Economy and Why the World's Prosperity Depends on It. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And finally, remember the movie Aliens? Those creatures may have been nasty, but they did not walk around inside a human forklift like Sigourney Weaver did. Come on, indeed. See, the arms of that machine gave Lieutenant Ellen Ripley superhuman strength. Now Panasonic has turned cinema into real life. The dual arm power amplification robot is being developed mainly for construction, but other uses include cargo loading, disaster relief, and sending gooey, toothy monsters hurtling into space. This is Marketplace Morning Report. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.